Good afternoon. We'd like to welcome you all to the February 28th regular meeting of the Chatham County Savannah Metropolitan Planning Commission, and we now call this meeting to order. And we'll pause for the invocation, and then we'll proceed into the Pledge of Allegiance. All right. Heavenly Father, we ask that you cover this meeting, impart a spirit of collaboration, cooperation, and discernment amongst the individuals in this body to make sure that we are making decisions for the betterment of our community. These and all things we ask in your name. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you. The meeting will be conducted as follows. The agenda is broken down into several parts. First, there are notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Next, the consent agenda, which consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation and there are no known objections. This will be followed by the regular business, old business, and then adjournment. For each agenda item on the regular business, the staff will make a presentation. The staff presentation will be followed by a presentation by the petitioner, should they elect to do so. The petitioner will be allotted a time frame of no more than 20 minutes. The board may then ask questions of the petitioner or staff for clarifications. Afterwards, the floor will be open for public comment. If you wish to comment on an item that the board is considering at the time, members of the public that are in person must fill out a speaker card and give to the staff. And I want to emphasize that if you all would please, if you wish to speak, fill out a speaker card so that you have the opportunity to actually speak. If you are participating virtually, use the raise your hand feature on the screen. Do not use the raise your hand feature until the item you want to comment on is being considered. At the appropriate time, you will be recognized and staff will unmute your microphone. At the end of your allotted time, as determined by the chair, your microphone will be muted and the chair will recognize the next speaker. Okay, the total public comment time will be equivalent of the petitioner's presentation time. Therefore, it is important that you use the raise your hand feature during the hearing on that item if you want to speak on a petition. Once the floor is closed for public comment on a petition, no additional public speakers will be allowed. If you're not certain if you want to speak, still use the raise your hand feature and or submit your speaker card, and you will have the option to decline when your name is called. After public comment, the petitioner will have the opportunity for rebuttal and then additional needed questions by the board. Finally, the board will take action. Okay? So moving to the agenda, and now we will have the approval of the agenda.
Cole's motion to approve the agenda.
No, it's second.
Okay, we'll do a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And thank you, and the agenda is approved. I'll move on to the next item on the agenda, that is the notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. There are none listed. We'll move to the next item on the agenda, and that is items requested to be removed from the final agenda. And for the record, I will read those items. As a rezoning map amendment, and as petition number 22-004383-ZA, and that's Albion Street, special use permit for a place of worship. The next item is a zoning text amendment, accessory dwelling units. That petition number is 22-005883. And then the next item is a map amendment for 343 Buckhalter Road, a rezone from R-A-CO, to a IL. And that petition number is 23-000304-ZA. We'll now take action. So is anyone in here in on regards to those items? Okay.
Cole's motion to remove items 1 through 3 from the final agenda.
Noah's second.
All right. If there's no discussion on that, we will have we'll enter a vote. We'll do a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. The motion carries and those items are removed from the regular agenda. Okay, then we'll move into the items requested to be withdrawn. And just for the public's note, public information. There are none listed. Let me back up. There are none listed on the items to be withdrawn. So then we'll move on to the consent agenda. And the consent agenda consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with staff recommendation for which no known objections have been identified nor anticipated. If there's any objections raised at the meeting, then those items will be moved to the regular agenda. Fortunately, today we do not have any items listed on the consent agenda. So therefore, we don't need to take action. So we'll move into the next item on the agenda, and that is the old business. And that is the petition, a rezoning map amendment, and that is at 1800 East 63rd Street, a rezone from RSF6 to a RMF2. And that petition number is 22-004-421-ZA. Mr. Lotson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you mentioned, this is a petition to rezone property at 1800 East 63rd Street. This project came before this board on January 17th for the initial hearing. Public hearing was held at that time. The commission moved to continue the item so that the applicant could arrange a neighborhood meeting to discuss the proposed project at this location. That meeting was held on February 21st. It was attended by approximately 30 individuals, and the applicant presented their proposed plan at that time. The request is to rezone the property from the current zoning classification, which is RSF6, residential single family, to a RMF2 zoning classification, which is a multifamily designation. And the requested density for the site is 20 units per acre. The site, as you can see here on the vicinity map, is on both sides of Reuben Clark Drive. It's approximately 20.5 acres in size. This is a tax map that shows the property in question. And this is a zoning map that identifies the property is currently zoned residential single family 6. The general zoning pattern on this side of the Truman Parkway is residential in nature. Both RSF6 and RSF10 are prevalent throughout that area. This is an aerial map that shows the properties. You can see that they are undeveloped. The property is more or less bisected by Reuben Clark Drive. Reuben Clark Drive is an interesting roadway in that it is a portion of it is public and a portion of it is private. As you enter the property from the Durant Avenue side, it's a public street that accesses Jenkins High School, but beyond the entrance to Jenkins, which is approximately here, it becomes private. So the portions that you see within the boundaries essentially of the subject property are actually private property owned by the property owner, even though it's used as little as it is as a public street, which accesses Memorial Hospital across the Truman Parkway. Any traffic that is on this road, based on my observation, is generally people either going to or through Memorial Hospital. So it's lightly traveled. I think the intent when it was constructed was to be a bypass for emergency services to be able to access the hospital without dealing with some of the traffic that is common on Duran, Waters Avenue, and other arterial streets in the area. Just for some context of the area at large, you can see Reuben Clark Drive coming from Durant Avenue here, making the turn over the parkway. So these are the areas that we're talking about in terms of the proposed rezoning. The proposed multifamily classification that the petitioner is requesting would allow them to develop this area with apartments. one of the things that we talked about in depth at the previous meeting was the general development pattern on this side of the Truman Parkway, the context, if you will, being primarily single family residential, along with some institutional uses, including the schools that are on that side. The other major issue really was discussion was related to access to the property. The property as shown on the petitioner's concept plan would be accessed along Reuben Clark Drive. They do, I believe, provide an emergency access along 63rd Street. Let me share the revised concept plan that the applicant sent us. And this is conceptual in nature, but this is more so a test fit so that they can understand what might be buildable at this location. So this proposal includes 165 unit, five story building here at essentially the curve of Reuben Clark Drive, adjacent to the neighborhoods to the south, which are single family, and potentially the realignment of an existing sort of major power line that runs through this property, as well as a second building right at the bridge going over the Truman Parkway. I did at the previous previous meeting share this exhibit, which is an exhibit of the area of the Truman Parkway before it was developed, really, to show the what was the Casey Canal and its relationship to the subject properties, which are here. And the only point of this really is to show how historically, you know, these neighborhoods ended here because of the location of this major canal. And then once it was realigned and straightened out, the existing Truman follows essentially that same path. We did spend some time at the previous meeting discussing the suitability of developing on this site. It was staff's position, or is, I should say, staff's position that the property, you know, is a unique property from the standpoint of trying to develop it, based on its location, based on the topography, based on the access to the property, as well as the adjacency, if you will, of the single family residential neighborhoods here to the east and to the north primarily. Our finding was that this zoning classification at this density is not compatible with the area at large. I should also mention that post the neighborhood meeting on the 21st, both on yesterday and today, staff did receive some additional comments from neighbors via email. Those were not attached to the agenda because it was already published, but we received four letters of objection between yesterday and today. Some of those individuals may be here today to speak, but they are expressing concerns about the potential impacts of development on that site. Staff did recommend denial at our initial meeting. That recommendation still stands. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lotson. Any questions for staff? Okay, hearing none, we'll now hear from the petitioner.
Is it? I think it should be on the back of this. That should be fine. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Robert McCorkle from law firm McCorkle Johnson McCoy here on behalf of the petitioner, Columbia Ventures. I think everybody's familiar with the property by now. It's our second go around on this. I'm going to try not to be completely repetitive of what we talked about the last time, although I don't think everybody was here the last meeting, but I'll try to primarily address the neighborhood meeting. As Marcus mentioned, the property is subject property is two parcels. My client has them both under contract. They total, let's just call it 20, 21 acres. Of those 20 or 21 acres, about three of them are developable. What we're proposing is an RMF 220 zoning district, which will allow for construction of multifamily apartment project on the site. At our last meeting, we had a lot of discussion about the difficulty of developing a site. Staff's report is full of a lot of discussion about the difficulty of developing the site. There is a power line that does have to be shifted over. There are surrounding wetlands around the area that's to be developed. It's also expensive land in general. We made the point and had a discussion here in January about the fact that we do not believe, and I do not believe staff believes, that it will ever be developed as a single family residential area because of the difficulty of the construction and because of the cost of the construction. But we do not believe, as we mentioned in the last meeting, that the complexity of the development of this piece of property should render it permanently unusable. And what we're asking this board to make a recommendation for is an opportunity to unlock the potential of this piece of property so that it can be used to help and meet the housing crisis that our city is currently going through. And we believe that that use that we would like to make of this property is in fact consistent with the future land use plan, which we mentioned before, which I'll show you again. I do want to mention again, just with regards to complexity, my client Columbia Ventures has over 30 years of experience in developing multifamily projects across multiple states and multiple types of complex situations, including Georgia and Florida and Colorado. I provided y'all some pictures before of some of their projects in various states. We won't go through them all in great detail again today, but I just wanted to kind of give the highlights there. They've developed a great reputation. We believe they're a good candidate for developing this property, even though it is in fact complex. The property itself is in a great centralized location in our city. It's immediately adjacent to Truman Parkway. It has access to hospital, has access to schools, it has access to public utilities. I would imagine that an apartment complex in this location will be a prime location for someone who works at the hospital where somebody would want to live, immediately adjacent with essentially a private road existing or a private road existing between it and the hospital itself. When this item was tabled in January, it was tabled for the specific purpose of providing a neighborhood meeting. And the MPC staff set up that neighborhood meeting. Marcus delivered, hand-delivered to all of the residents in the surrounding areas notices of the meeting because there had been some discussion about the fact that not all the owners of the properties live in the properties, and so they might not have gotten notice based on tax records, so they were all hand-delivered by staff. At that meeting, which lasted about an hour and a half, there were probably 30 or so people there in attendance. We received some constructive comments, and we tried to address some of those comments in our revised conceptual plan, which was shown earlier, which I'll show again. But there are several general comments I'd like to address today. One is that we will be putting traffic into the neighborhood, both driving traffic as well as pedestrian traffic. That seemed to be pretty one of the top two issues. As for driving, my client has gone to great expense and great effort to get the southern parcel of these two parcels under contract from Memorial Hospital that includes the private road of Reuben Clark Drive to make it a part of this development for the specific purpose of getting the traffic out of the neighborhood and putting it onto Reuben Clark Drive. As was shown earlier, Reuben Clark runs all the way out to Durin. It will only provide access to our property and to the hospital, essentially the way it's laid out. It has a large divided entrance and exit onto Durin Avenue, two-lane road throughout here, wooded on both sides, Truman Parkway on the left, residences on the right. So we will essentially have private access. I think a lot of the previous developments, or all the previous developments, showed the sole access coming through the neighborhood, which this will not do. It has been, again, a great effort to make that happen, but it was done for the specific purpose of trying to remove any of that traffic out of the neighborhood. As I said, it will essentially serve just these two properties. As for pedestrians, there was a request made at the meeting about us having a fence or a wall, and there was discussion about, well, that wall needs to be 8 feet or 10 feet or 30 feet or whatever the height is, because people will somehow find a way to go around whatever would be constructed there to keep people out of the neighborhood. these are public roads. It's a little bit of a, I can't stand here before you today and promise you or the residents that there won't be a single person that walks out of this development into the neighborhood. But I will say that, as I said at the meeting, the people who will live in this apartment complex will be residents. They will be citizens. They will consider this place their home. And so they will live there as well. But we're happy to build a fence, our revised site plan. We got rid of the emergency access exit on the 63rd Street. We showed a fence. We showed landscaping all the way down that property line to try to prevent people from being able to walk out of the apartment complex into the streets if that's what the neighbors would like. The only way we would have to have some kind of emergency access, which we could figure out the location, is if the city, in fact, requires us to have it, which we won't know whether we will or won't. But as far as we're concerned, if we can develop the property without having any access on any of the streets to the east, then we'll do so, and we'll build a fence to separate the property from the rest of the neighborhood. It's worth noting there are no amenities in the neighborhood that anybody would be walking to. All of the services for this apartment complex will be provided off of Duren, access through Reuben Clark Drive, our private road. And so we don't believe there's any real reason for individuals to be walking into the neighborhood to try to reach some amenity or some store or some other item that would be available to them there that's not otherwise available to them through their entrance and exit. Number two item was increased flood risk because of impervious surfaces we'll be constructing inside of the property. This is true no matter what is developed on this piece of property. If anything is ever developed, there are going to be impervious surfaces. It's worth noting that the low point and the outfall for this property as well as the neighborhood is to the west of this property, not going towards the neighborhood. We will be required to have substantial engineered infiltration and stormwater management infrastructure constructed in connection with what we do. Engineering for the city of Savannah will have to sign off on everything we do. We have to treat all the stormwater that our project creates and all the stormwater that was already treating. And we'll have to deal with that. There was discussion at the meeting about there being flooding in the neighborhood already at times over its history and some perhaps recently on certain streets. You know, we're happy to have a discussion with the city of Savannah when we go through our engineering process about what we can do in our infrastructure that will help alleviate that flooding in the city. Frankly, the property is being unmaintained at this point, which isn't necessarily a good thing for the water to get to where it needs to get all the way to the west, which is some more than 1,000 feet over towards Truman Parkway and the canal. So we believe that the improvements that we can make on the site through our own stormwater system will be an improvement to what exists currently on the site and what serves the neighborhood currently. Number three was destruction of trees in the ecosystem and noise from the highway. I wanted to show you these pictures. And I showed them before, and I'm going to show them to you again. Everything in red here is forested wetlands. And so this area in black is the area of the property, essentially, that will be developed for the main building area that we're talking about. I show this just to show that there is these other wetlands will be maintained. So we're talking about 3 or so acres of development out of 20 or 21 acres worth of property. We're not destroying the ecosystem on this land. We are also not going to be removing so many trees that is going to have any kind of significant effect on road noise and other things as far as the ecosystem is concerned. You'll see here, and it's hard to read on this, and I'm sorry that the color turned out the way it was, but I showed a distance tracer on the distances that we have in between the general area that we would be developing and the Truman Parkway side of our property. I'm going to read it off my paper because I can read it better. It's about 750 feet this way of trees that will remain in this area. Obviously, it gets a little bit shorter down here on the bottom and a little bit longer up here at the top. This is all forested wetlands here as well. I don't believe any of this property is developable. They're not divided into lots. This is another 440 feet of buffer that exists before this road up here. Over here to the south, farther down, you've got another 265, 270 feet of buffer that none of this area is going to be touched or changed down here south of Reuben Clark Drive. So that buffer in this whole area will remain. This area up here is about 175 feet. And so there are significant wetlands. There are significant forested tree areas that will remain. And the impact of the ecosystem is going to be very small compared to the entire size of the property. And we believe that road noise will not be an issue. There's still 800, 750 feet of trees in between us and the Truman Parkway. Item four is just a general objection, I think, primarily to having multifamily immediately adjacent to this residential neighborhood and the height of the project. The property that we'd be developing is actually lower by 10 or 15 feet than the neighborhood is. It gets lower as it goes towards the canal. We believe that this 10 to 15 foot change in elevation will help to address the height of our building. 50 feet would be the maximum height in our zoning. The maximum height in the zoning of the neighborhood is RSF 10. It's 40 feet, I believe. And so we've got about a 10 foot difference. The height of the actual ground there about makes up that difference. So it ultimately ends up being about the same as far as maximum height is permitted. That being said, we do intend to build a five-story building that will be adjacent to the single-family residences. We heard requests from the neighbors about having the fence, like I mentioned before. We also heard having a request for landscaping and trees along that line. There's a property here. The main property impacted is about four houses that exist in this stretch that will be immediately adjacent to the area where the development, and there are obviously several houses on this block right here, which are the ones that are primarily affected. And so we heard that. We did adjust the site plan, and we are showing a landscaped area along the fence line. We can plant tall evergreens, red cedars, ligustrums, things that can both create a natural buffer as well as help to lessen the impact of the height of the building. But ultimately, this question is an issue, I think, of whether a multifamily project can exist adjacent to a single family development. We believe that it can. We don't believe that these two residential uses are mutually exclusive. They're both residential. As I mentioned before, the people that live in this apartment complex are going to be residents, and they're going to consider this their home. This city, like all cities, have a great mix of available residential apartments, townhouses, single-family residences of various densities. These things are all good. They create diversity. They are the way that we address a housing crisis and a housing situation as a city, is to have diversity of residential availability that allows for different price points in different areas. People choose to live different ways in 2020 when they might have when this neighborhood was originally constructed. And so we believe that this housing mix can coexist. And if multifamily can't exist immediately next to single family, where can it exist? We have numerous examples all over the city of multifamily projects being located adjacent to single family projects. We have industrial projects located next to single family residential areas. These things can be done in the right way. They can be addressed. They can be buffered and fenced and all of these things. And we believe that this site itself is a good place for this. Apparently, when the future land use map was done, they agreed. We talked about this a little bit last week. This is the future land use map. And you'll see here that all of this area, all of this single family is residential suburban single family, defined as areas identified for single family detached residential dwellings at a density not to exceed 5 units per gross acre. That's the definition. That's the use. There are only three residential uses in the future land use map. Two of them are for single family residences only. The other one is residential general, which is defined as areas with a wide range of residential uses, including multifamily dwellings, attached dwellings, and small single lot dwellings with densities greater than 10 units per gross acre. That is what this piece of property is. And we acknowledge that this is all shown as conservation because there are wetlands in the area, and I don't believe that the majority of that property is going to be developed, so it's shown as conservation. But this piece was specifically carved out for multifamily development. And it would have been very easy, I would assume, when they were doing this, to just use single-family suburban because that's what's everything around it. But a choice was made at that time to make it residential general. I have to assume to some degree that that choice was made because maybe this site is a good site to have a multifamily project based on its location. Or maybe they knew the property was complex and that it was going to require some special thinking and a way to do it that's outside the bounds of what a single family residential neighborhood would be. And so we do believe we're consistent with a future land use map. We do believe that what we're doing is permitted under that map. And we're asking for this rezoning to allow that to happen. Marcus showed briefly, and I'm almost done. Marcus showed briefly our revised site plan. You'll see here, we're showing a fence. We're showing plantings going down this whole property line along these few properties that are immediately adjacent right here. But essentially, the project has generally remained the same. I did change the five stories from six stories because five stories is based 50 feet is what's permitted in the district that we're asking. And so, as I said to the owners, I'm not belittling in any way their comments or their feelings. We took them all seriously. I got my earful certainly at the meeting, and there was a lot of conversation about the fact that I'm only in this for the money, and I'm only doing this because my clients pay me, and my clients are only doing this for money, and this is all about money. And I even had voicemails on my phone when I left the meeting, and I got to listen to those on the way home. So I understand. I've done this, been doing this a long time, and I appreciate the fact that residents generally, neighbors generally, are nervous about property adjacent to them being developed. I also understand the fact that it's human nature that people would prefer to have trees and undeveloped property next to them as opposed to having anything, an apartment, another house, a commercial project, anything. It's human nature. You would rather have trees. But this is 20 acres of privately owned, undeveloped property that is immediately adjacent to this neighborhood that was never planned specifically as part of this neighborhood. It was not subdivided out and laid out as part of this neighborhood. And so this property has always been there. It's always been there as a possibility to be developed. And if you look at the future land use map, future land use map says it can be developed for multifamily project. And so I appreciate the nature. I appreciate the idea of not wanting to have a taller building next to you and to prefer that that private property remain to be trees forever or be a park. But that's not always a reality. My client is a developer. They are in a business, and they are in the business of building residential multifamily projects. And this is a good site for them, we believe. We know it's going to be expensive. We know it's going to be difficult, but we believe that they're the right people to do it. The city needs housing. The city needs apartments. The city needs a mix of opportunities for residents beyond just single family. And that's what we're here to offer. And we think that with the addition of Reuben Clark Drive particularly, and given that this piece of property will essentially have private access off of Durin, and given that we can plan it and fence it if the neighbors would like us to, we believe that this is a good place for this project. It's a good place to add these units, and we can do it in the right way. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions you all have.
Thank you, Mr. McCorkle. Any questions for the petitioner? Mr. Coles.
Mr. McCorkle, on your rendering, and it's similar to the one that we saw at the last meeting, it shows this area buffering along the what would be the eastern part of the property. That buffering doesn't exist. There's no trees there because that's on private property adjacent to the property you're talking about developing. Is there a reason why that's still being represented on this?
I'm not trying to represent, or we're not trying to represent this specifically, what is trees and what is not trees, or what may be bushes or what is grass or what. This is just a rendering of where there is green space around the edge of the property. Some of this is not on our property, which is also pointed out by the owners, which I understand. But the only thing we're showing as far as trees are trees that we would intend on planting and lining on the property.
Anything else for Mr. McCorkle?
Can you zoom in where the hand is?
Yes. Well, I say yes. Hey, here we go.
Just restate what you talked about in emergency access.
So again, we don't really know whether the city is going to require us to have emergency access there or not. We just don't know. And so originally we had showed it over here, and I know that there is a house here, and I believe Mr. Coles owns it. And no, there is a house here.
For the record, no, I do not own that house.
What?
Just to be clear, I do not own that house or any property on that street.
Okay. So we heard the concerns of the neighborhood about having this here. We're, again, showing it here back onto Costa Rica, but if we can have the property without having any emergency access, we will have it without having a separate emergency access, and that's going to have to be determined when we go through our full site plan. But this was the location that was the closest to the immediate residence. So there was discussion of a fence and landscaping there. So that's what we changed.
Mr. Noah, don't forget your microphone next time.
Sorry.
Thank you. Any further questions for the petitioner? All right.
Thank you.
Hearing none, we'll go into public comment. We'll start with the participant online, Lynn Strickland. If you would, state your name for the records, and you have 3 minutes.
Hey, my name's Lynn Strickland, and my comment is really just to the Metropolitan Planning Commission. If you guys could rezone this area, I think that would be a better solution. If this area is developed, we are going to have flooding like you wouldn't believe. As it's been stated earlier, we have definitely had flooding in this area in the past. This is where the Casey Canal used to run. And with that area being developed, we see a problem with the wetlands that are already there. To say that the other 18 acres would not be affected by this 3 acres of development, I believe is just trying to pull something over on the city of Savannah, honestly. And that property that they want to develop, it backs right up to the houses on 63rd and Spring Hill. So there's a buffer everywhere but there. And the developer's proposal is only that, a proposal. And as far as the emergency access, again, it's only a proposal and an if. There's nothing guaranteed with that. So I do feel like that those things are not being addressed properly by the developer. And also to say that there's nothing in our neighborhood. We have Savannah State right there. We have lots of shops, lots of things on the other side of the neighborhood. I'm not for a wall or a fence or anything because I'm not for a 5-story building in the wetlands. Thank you.
Oh, there we go. Thanks. All right. Move on to the next public speaker, and I can't quite make out the last name is David, and I'm not sure if this is Pelletier or.
I'm David Pelletier, but I didn't sign up for speaker. I retired from the office, that's all.
Okay, no, the card is specifically if you want to speak, but you did the right thing and declined it if you opt not to. All right, thank you. Justin LeBrace. And please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Yes, sir. My name is Justin LeBrake. I'm a resident on 63rd Street. I thank you guys for your time and consideration. I'm not here to impede progress or growth in the beautiful city, but I'm purely here to oppose the future rat factory that will be built at the end of my street. I understand the desirability of our neighborhood is profitable, but at whose expense? Ours. The resident, the citizen, the taxpayer. After a heavy rain, the immediate neighborhood, including myself, will be terrified that the rain will flood our houses because the wetlands can no longer do their job, concrete stifling the nature beneath. I attended the meeting on July 21st, the same meeting where the developers didn't show up. We were given a diagram of potential plans and nothing more. The lawyer, Mr. McCorkle, couldn't answer a simple question of how they plan to cram 254 units on 3 acres, still unanswered. The map that we have, the zoomed out map, looks promising if you're trying to make a buck, but if you're a citizen, it's just an eyesore. I don't know. I didn't expect to go first. I was hoping other people were going to talk, so I didn't have to. That's all I got. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you. Next speaker is Alex Wolf.
Hello, I'm Alex Wolf. I live a block down the street from the proposed development where the land's going to be rezoned. So I've got a list, so I'm just going to read it real quick. I did talk to a multifamily architect, multifamily development architect about this development, and he did not feel like it was an appropriate use of the space. So these are my notes. The lot is suitable for a single family residence. It's definitely developable for a single home, you know, perhaps on stilts, 48 inches, something like that, and you could put a house there safely, and not too much impede on like the flooding and stuff like that. The proposed development is out of scale with the neighborhood. So being 5 stories, the next tallest building is only 2 stories. So it would definitely stand out. The proposed emergency access only can easily disappear in the development process, leaving that corridor open for traffic through the neighborhood, you know, congestion, that kind of thing, noise, and of course, parking, because this rendering really for one-to-one parking is not appropriate. There aren't enough spaces for the amount of units that they're proposing in a 5-story building. So parking would inevitably spill onto the street. There would be kind of just issues with cars not knowing where to be, or residents of the new development being frustrated and kind of just trying to park places. There's really inadequate on-site turnaround space for emergency vehicles. If you look at that plan, I'm not an expert, but my understanding is that you need like 100-foot diameter turnaround space for like a fire truck, you know, just safety stuff. You know, this will cause increased traffic in our neighborhood and the surrounding streets, whether that be out to Duran, Delessips, the on-ramps, that sort of thing. It'll increase flood risk for the existing houses due to impervious surfaces. Obviously, we're paving a large area. Water has to fall. It's going to run off not only water, but the pollution from the cars and stuff, the parking lot. That's all going to run off either into the wetlands or into the adjacent properties during heavy rains.
Got about 15 seconds.
Okay. All right. Well. Well, a lot of noise will be caused, and I think that it'll change the nature of the neighborhood permanently and probably for the worse. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, the next speaker, Robin Gunn. Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes as well.
Thank you. My name is Robin Gunn. I live at 2243 Armstrong Drive, which is at the other end of 63rd Street from where the proposed building on the current site plan will be developed. I do also want to thank all the commissioners and the staff for your time and your dedication to our community. I'm opposed to this development proposal, the rezoning proposal. First of all, I wanted to reassure myself that we are in fact talking about the land being rezoned. We are not here so that y'all can approve or disprove any particular site plan.
That is correct.
So the site plan can flex after this, no matter what happens today. Secondly, I did attend the meeting, and I remember it differently a little bit, but that's okay. I'm opposed. The two main concerns that I have are environmental concerns and incompatibility. Environmental, I'm going to start by mentioning that the road that is immediately to the east of this property is called Spring Hill Road, and it is an historic road.
One second, Ms. Gunn. And whoever that is, please address your phone.
It's cutting into my time.
No, I paused it. I'm going to allow for you to have your time.
Okay.
And just for that matter, if everybody else would double check your phones to make sure that they are silenced. Thank you.
I get an extra 5 minutes, right?
No.
Yes. Okay.
You got about an extra 30 seconds.
Oh, no. Okay. Historic Spring Hill Road.
You're right at 2 minutes left.
Okay, super. Historic Spring Hill Road, according to my neighbors, was named that because there was a spring, which is the low part, which is where this is proposed to be developed, and our part of the neighborhood is on the hill. So this parcel serves as a natural drainage retention area for not just the immediate houses that immediately abut this proposed property, but in fact our entire neighborhood. In addition to that, that drainage impact will only be increased as we continue to experience across our community sea level rise and the changes that our climate is going through right now. Secondly, environmentally, that natural area, although most of this property is supposed to be designated as a natural area, prior to the construction, all of the power lines need to be moved. Those are major power lines because there is a substation immediately to the south of this property on the Jenkins High School property. Those giant power line poles are going to, by the time all the construction and moving is done, so much damage will likely be done to the environmental impact that it's going to take decades to reestablish. Finally, on the incompatibility, I believe that we have a housing problem in Savannah too. I do not believe that this parcel needs to solve that for the entire city. If there are 3 acres of developable land zoned single family, put 3 acres worth of single family housing on those 3 acres, and we will welcome them into the neighborhood, those people that live in those houses. The final note I want to say is that there was one particular parcel or a section of 3 parcels that's immediately north of this property that was alluded to as being undevelopable by the developer's representative. Right now on realtor.com, those 3 parcels are being marketed to be sold for single family development. And in the description right now on realtor.com, it says adjacent property is going to be rezoned. So I don't know how they're going to foresee the future as a possible in that description, they're saying it could be rezoned for multifamily and that possibly those parcels could be for multifamily as well.
Okay.
So there's a lot of activity in our neighborhood, and we really hope that you will consider our position. Thank you.
Thank you. Next person is Anthony Cooper. Please state your name for the record. You have 3 minutes as well.
My name is Anthony Cooper. I just have maybe a few points and a few questions, especially concerning emergency access through our neighborhood. Being a neighborhood of single family homes, the activities are those of single family homes, including children playing in the street, biking and walking traffic of residences. Of residents that are in the neighborhood, as well as those going to the school. Our neighborhood has one poorly built sidewalk that serves from De Lesseps to the school. Increased traffic, which would be inherent with any other access point to a property, could put those kids or residents or just people traveling down the street in danger. Also, it's not the light and noise pollution increasing from the highway as much as the noise and light pollution being created by a 5-story building directly next to a neighborhood, as it rises much higher than the neighborhood and the other residences in the neighborhood that will spill over into all the homes nearby and within the block of the building. Likewise, that would apply to any water. I live on 63rd, and in a heavy rain, and the street floods every time. Two streets over, there is often standing water there. Those are both directly next to the proposed building site. And those are just my main concerns I'd like to take out there. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay, we'll have Oliver Kaysen, and I'm not sure if the last name is Guy or Gary. Okay, if you would, state your name for the record.
Yeah, my name is Oliver Kaysen Gary. I mentioned this in the public record. I have sent you this email several times throughout the whole process because the can's been kicked down the road, but it's nice to meet so many of my neighbors here today. I live down on 1718 60th Street, right in the bowl created by the hill. When my wife and I bought the property coming up on a year now, like, we were in this little green verdant area of Savannah, and the whole city has this nice little pocket of land. And I didn't know how it was zoned when I bought it. when I saw the house, I was like, this is where we're going to live, and this is where I want to build my life. And I don't want to have developers coming in and tearing down the trees, tearing down the whole reasons that makes our neighborhood special and unique in this whole city of properties. It's a city, but we have a very country nature feel to our neighborhood. And throwing up a 501 is not going to keep that vibe of our neighborhood. It's not going to keep the birds that migrate through. It's not going to keep the turtles and the foxes. And the, we get deer in our neighborhood. Like, this is a city. Like, this is, we get deer in our neighborhood. It's a very little, special little place that I don't want to see torn up because the only green they see is dollars, not nature. I don't want to have water flowing in my backyard because they have destroyed the trees. And no matter how many images you see, the amount of renderings they show us, everyone here knows the neighborhood works now. And the only way they can get this thing built, if it was viable, they'd be selling it to us. You'd be telling us there'd be parks and tennis courts and bike trails and nature walks and all of these things. But what they want to do is put this up and extract the value of our neighborhood for some nameless C-suite goons. And that's my time. Thank you guys.
Sorry. Thank you. All right. Betsy Cameron. Please state your name for the record and hold to the 3 minutes time.
Lord. All right. My name is Betsy Cameron. I'm not a speaker or anything. I did go to the other meeting. Just wanted to come and kind of speak my piece here. I've lived in this neighborhood since I was 10 years old. It's an incredible little place, like he was saying. I mean, it is so amazing. I call it the stuck-in neighborhood in the middle of the whole city that nobody knows exists. Okay. We don't have a problem with growth or building. We actually have some apartments around us. They're called Caroline Apartments. We have some apartments on 52nd. I actually have a little picture here if anybody wants to see it. They're two-story. They're brick. They're amazing.
Hey, come back to the microphone. No, microphone. Microphone.
Oh, sorry. They fit in. People work. We all work together. It's wonderful. But they fit in with our neighborhood. My sister lives on 62nd Street. She will literally walk out her door and look down and see a five-story building. I mean, let's say she only sees three stories. Okay, big deal. Right now we see nothing but trees and beautiful. We just drove down here, came down President Street, and they're building that brand new hotel right there. I'm sure everybody sees it. It's five stories tall. It's in downtown Savannah. Why would you be building a five-story building in my neighborhood in this little podunk, little tiny place? And the whole thing about not destroying anything, I just don't see how that's going to happen. You're getting ready to build this. I mean, it's beautiful. Their stuff is beautiful. I mean, I went on and looked at it. It is beautiful. It just doesn't belong right there. How are you going to not destroy all the trees when you're building it? And the whole thing about, oh, let's replace 10 little trees for a big oak tree, that's just not the same. I mean, I don't know how that works. I don't know what that trade-out is, but that's just not the same. I mean, it's just not. And, I mean, y'all have really just got to think about this. I mean, this is a great little spot. We have two schools. I mean, we went through all the construction of a brand-new Juliet Lowe, broken road. That was great. We don't have a problem with that, but a five-story apartment building at the stuck-in tornado, if they had more land to build on, they'd build it somewhere else, but they're putting it right up against our neighborhood because it's all they've got. I mean, they're cramming it in. And again, we have no problem with little apartments, just not a five-story building that's going to take over our whole neighborhood. And I'm sorry, but they keep saying 2 units to 20 units. How are you getting 250 apartments in 60 units? I mean, I guess you're going to cram four apartments. I mean, I don't know. The whole thing just freaks me out, to be perfectly honest. And they keep saying multifamily. We don't have a problem with multifamily. These apartments are multifamily. We have a problem with five stories of multifamily. And to be honest, all my life, I thought the hospital would come over and buy that land and build dormitories. I'm not going to lie to you. Ever since Mercer came in, I figured they'd end up doing that. I just didn't think it'd be some big, huge five-story complex, to be honest. And that's really what freaks me out the most about it, is it's just going to ruin. I mean, we see sunsets in our neighborhood over the trees. That's all going to be gone. And they can say that the land's a little lower there. That right there tells you you probably shouldn't build on it if it's lower. It's going to flood. Well, if you don't build it up, how's it not going to flood? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. I've been stuck in my neighborhood three times from flooding where I could not get out. So I'm telling you, they really need to look at that.
Thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciate y'all listening to us. Thank you.
Thanks. Mark Fountain,
please state your name for the record and hold to the 3 minutes time.
Okay. Good evening. Good evening. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Mark Fountain. I live at there on 63rd Street. Oh my goodness, what is this, counselor? I guess you lift this up here, but it's $100 bill. That's what this is all about. This and lots and lots and lots of these. Savannah, like many places, may need housing, but what they need more than anything is affordable housing. This development, this is what this development's about. It's not about Section 8. It's not about affordable housing. It is about whatever the market is going to support. So this isn't the place for that. A lot of my neighbors have been up here and said many good things. I'd like to summarize just a little bit, and if I have any more time, maybe I can find some more money.
Well, you got 2 minutes left, though.
All right. Rezoning should not be allowed because this is entirely out of character for this neighborhood. I mean, your staff has been all over this 4 times. Put there what needs to be there. Development of this type will cause additional flooding down Costa Rica Street as well as the numbered streets west of Costa Rica, and it will greatly add to the pollution runoff of the oil and vehicle contamination into the canal ecosystem here. Should this, however, be rezoned to cater to the developer's money needs here, it should be done what is best for the community. And again, this is not affordable housing. The plan said it was a 6-story. I don't have the updated information. All I have is from what was I saw at the community meeting last week. We've had very, very little time to speak with people and to prepare and to rebut. But it was going to be, for Christ's sake, a 6-story building, 6 stories in our neighborhood. You walk anywhere in Chatham County, Savannah, very few buildings are taller than 6 stories. Well, they've taken one off. It's still a skyscraper over here. There should be, if this is approved, there should be a vehicle mechanism that the neighborhood is protected as much as possible. No noise mitigation from this project, light pollution mitigation. Yes, there needs to be a berm. I was looking at a berm on the way back from Atlanta, separating Southbridge development. That berm must be 20 feet tall, and it's got pine trees growing on it. Well, that can be done along here, too, but you can't build right up to the property line.
You got about 10 seconds.
You know, we could really shorten a lot of these by simply just dismissing the staff and not listening to them. They have unanimously said no, time and time and time again. That's what you pay them for. They are the experts. You know, we're all just appointed. We come and go. But these are the people that are here that know what they're talking about. Right. And I don't see any more up here, Mr. McCorkle, but I'll be sure to get back to you.
That's your time. Thanks. Thank you. All right. We have Mr. Dillon. Would you like to speak in rebuttal? Okay. So that concludes the public comment. So Mr. McCorkle, you have the opportunity to rebut public comment.
Robert McCorkle, for the record again, for the petitioner. I've been doing this a long time, and gotta say, I've never had anybody wave money at me or address me directly in a meeting. Frankly, certainly never been called a nameless C-suite goon before. Not sure what that means. But I don't think it's funny. And, you know, developers, there's a tendency for developers to be used as a bad word. The word developer has become a bad word. And what people and lawyers, developers, may be even worse of a word. Or developers, lawyers. The reality is that without developers, grocery stores don't exist. Restaurants don't exist. Single family residential neighborhoods don't exist.
Hang on for a second, Mr. McCorkle. And so, if you all would, please keep all of the commentary out, period. Not even down. Keep it out, period. If not, I will have to ask you to leave. The petitioner offered you all the respect and courtesy to speak openly. I would like for you all to do the exact same thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So again, grocery stores wouldn't exist, single family residences wouldn't exist, the houses that the neighbors live in probably would not exist unless they built them themselves. All of those things are ultimately constructed by developers, and almost every single time that that developer went in to do such one of those things on that list, the neighbors of those properties didn't want it to happen, and developer was used as a bad name or money was waived to them or whatever it was. And at the end of the day, people, these things get built, and then people live there, and those people become the residences, and then they'll object to whatever the next thing is that gets built next to them. Or they'll eat in the restaurant or eat in the grocery store that they didn't want next to them, much like I fought a million battles in this city for these things, whether it's for, you know, grocery stores or apartments or whatever it is. And in almost all of those cases, we have had staff recommendations for denial. And in almost all of those cases, we've had neighbors stand up and object. And if the standard was, are the neighbors going to object to something being developed on the vacant piece of property adjacent to them, then nothing would ever get built in this city, that's for sure. And I understand that, as I mentioned before. But the question before us is, do we believe, again, as the future land use map says, that a multifamily project is appropriate on this site? Is this a good location, given the fact that my client has gone to the effort that he has to provide a private drive for it that will not materially impact the neighborhood in the manner in which it otherwise would? And we believe that it would. We believe that it does, and we believe that it is. I do want to mention one other last thing, which is there was a comment about my client not being at the previous meeting. And that is correct. I was at the previous meeting. My client was not. And the reason is because the date for that meeting ended up getting changed. It was going to be before that. And my client had a out-of-the-country trip schedule, and so could not be there on the date that it was there. But it is not a reflection of lacking of caring of this project. There's going to be millions and millions of dollars spent on this, a significant taking on of my client, and they are behind this project. And as was mentioned by one of the neighbors, they build a beautiful product. They do great work, and we hope that y'all will allow us to do that great work here. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. McCorkle? Ms. Bowles.
Mr. McCorkle, if you would please address the issue with parking. There was a question about that, and I had some follow-ups, too, about the buffer.
We don't anticipate any kind of a parking variance, at least on the current site plan. We're showing 195 units and 260 spaces, so we will meet the parking requirements of the city, and we don't anticipate having parking spilling out into the neighborhood, particularly if we are asked to put up a fence and kind of wall it off.
If I may follow up.
Sure.
And would you also be able to address the buffer? I saw the proposal here. I know this is not a site plan.
Sure.
Do you have any anticipation of how high that buffer might be?
Yeah.
And then also related to that, because you did mention that the site drops down. So when I think it's two stories in the single family.
It's up to 40 feet, but I think the tallest house is probably two stories plus a roof.
Okay. And then if you can somehow illustrate for us, what does that look like in terms of a section? So if it drops down.
Let's call it a two-story house with a roof 25 feet. I'm not an engineer, nor am I a home builder, but let's say it's 25 feet, 30 feet maybe, depending on how it's constructed. But many of the houses are single family, will be shorter than that. But here, the height in the neighborhood, which is immediately adjacent, along here, this is RSF 10, which I believe the height is 40 feet. And so the height on this piece of property as rezoned would be 50 feet. So all we were trying to make the point of is if it drops down 10 or 15 feet adjacent to it, then ultimately the maximum height of the two areas will be pretty much identical. Now, I'm not saying that there is a 40-foot tall house built immediately adjacent to this, but the maximum height that would be permitted would essentially be about equal. Hopefully that answered your question. Thank you.
Anything further for the petitioner? All right, hearing none. Yes, sir.
I have a question, just a comment.
Okay.
One, I thank the residents who came out to speak today. Obviously, it's a passionate issue for folks who live nearby. Obviously, all of your points are very valid. You live in a beautiful neighborhood. You want to keep the character of your neighborhood that you purchased. The petitioner too has some valid points. I just want to, you know, from my perspective, I think one of the comments from a resident was we were here to discuss zoning and not site plans and not site reviews or stormwater, but really about the appropriateness of the zoning petition. And so in the question really is whether or not a multifamily zoning at this parcel is appropriate given the zoning around it. People can disagree, and it may not be appropriate in this case. Staff has recommended denial. I do want to say just my perspective that as we continue to hear cases like this and as we continue to experience growth in our community, we are going to have to create the balance between single family homes and multifamily use and a variety of housing inventory. And we're going to have to be able to define appropriateness a little bit clearer than we've been able to define it in the past just because we haven't had that growth and development. So I just wanted to have that comment because I do believe that you can have multifamily and single family coexist appropriately next to one another in parcels. And just to remember that this is a question about zoning and not a site plan or an emergency exit, et cetera.
Thank you, Mr. Meld. I share a similar sentiment. Mr. Noah.
I have a question for staff.
Okay.
Can you talk a little more about the future land use?
Sure.
Please. Wayne Noah.
So this exhibit shows the future land use map designations for the subject properties and the properties in the immediate vicinity. As you can see, specific to the subject properties, a portion, let me zoom in a little more, maybe it's bigger on your screen, I guess. A portion of it is designated as residential general. The balance of it is designated as conservation. And I think Mr. McCorkle made the point during his presentation that the likely reason for that, and I agree with this, is that there's significant wetlands on this property, on these properties, and that the residential general classification is a classification that permits multiple housing types. Shouldn't say permits, suggests multiple housing types could be appropriate on within that classification. So within residential general, you could have either or a mix of single family, two family duplexes, or multifamily on a property with a classification such as that. More broadly, I'd just like to say about future land use map designations at large is that it is not as prescriptive as a zoning designation, but it is intended to give some indication of what was deemed at the time that designation was created could be appropriate on the site.
Thank you, sir. Anything else? All right.
Mr. Chairman,
yes, Chair Melder,
can you review again, Mr. Lotson, if you would, the reasons why MPC staff recommended denial as it relates to the appropriateness of zoning?
Sure. One of the things that we often look at when we're talking about whether a zoning is appropriate or not, there's two really sort of broad areas. The identified criteria within the zoning ordinance, which we evaluate for each case, and then there's more of a evaluation of what we feel or whether we feel the proposed change is compatible with the existing land use pattern, which frankly is a little more difficult sometimes to get your arms around. In terms of the review criteria, and they're outlined in the ordinance, it starts with whether the range of uses permitted in the proposed zoning district is more suitable than the range of uses permitted in the district that's been requested. So as it relates to that particular criteria, We found that it was not more suitable. The range of uses permitted in the multifamily zoning classification, and that gets into some of the compatibility issues or concerns, I think, that we saw when evaluating this particular site. Additionally, the criteria ask whether the proposed zoning district addresses a specific need in the county or city, and we found that the proposed zoning would allow residential housing inventory to be created, which has been identified as a need in the city. However, we found, in addition to that, that multi-family development on that site may potentially have negative impacts on adjoining property owners. We went through other criteria related to compatibility, consistency, and reasonable use of the land as well. And there was a lot of discussion about that, on whether or not this property under the current zoning has reasonable use. When you look at that, I think you can say on paper, yes, you know, it's zoned for single family residential. That means somebody could build a house on it or several houses potentially. I think the reality of that is, as we discussed, I think some in the pre-meeting and probably at the previous hearing in January, is that every property is different in terms of what it actually takes to develop the site. And this site is unique in that there'll be substantial costs associated with developing it. Therefore, single family residential is less likely with that reality in hand. But we did go through the review criteria and found that the majority of those criteria, it did not meet, and therefore our recommendation.
Mr. Lawson, was there any level of multifamily that you believe MPC staff would have felt was appropriate at this site?
Well, Mr. Melder, I think the only way I could answer that is that we only evaluated the petitioner's request, which was the RMF2 designation at 20 units per acre. We certainly could spend and would spend more time evaluating a different request if it was a different density or a different zoning district, but we did not go into great depth considering those things because they would have been speculative. I think it's fair to say that a different zoning district and or a different density, you know, certainly could be considered differently than what's been presented to us so far.
Thank you, Mr. Lawson.
Yes, sir.
Anything further, Mr. Lawson? All right. Thanks. Hearing none, we'll entertain a motion.
Cole's motion to approve staff's recommendation of denial.
Do we have a second?
To move us along, I'll second his motion.
Okay. So we got a motion made by Mr. Coles and seconded by Mr. Urban to approve staff's recommendation of a denial. We'll entertain a vote. Well, if there's no discussion on that, we'll entertain a vote. Ms. Bowles?
No.
Mr. Coleman?
No.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Urban? Mr. Melder?
No.
Mr. Noah?
No.
Mr. Notrika?
No.
Mr. Kegler?
No.
Mr. Wildwoody?
No.
9-2 vote no, so that the motion fails, so we'll entertain a new motion.
Coles, make a motion that the rezoning be amended to RMF 210 as opposed to RMF 220.
Do we have a second?
I'll second for discussion.
Okay. All right, so motion is made by Mr. Coles to change the density, essentially, to a RMF 210 zoning type, and seconded by Mr. Kegler, and we'll open it up for discussion.
Noah, I'd like to hear from staff the difference between the two,
right,
and what is allowed under the current motion as far as height, parking, all the issues that
right
needed to be addressed or concerns, and how it would play out.
So, Mr. Noah, the requested zoning by the petitioner, the RMF2, which is the base zoning for the district, there's three multifamily classifications. That, whether the density is 2 units per acre or 100 units per acre, the development standards are the same. So the parking requirements will be the same, one per unit. The height, which is a maximum of 50 feet, will be the same, the setbacks, buffers, et cetera. The only thing that's different is the maximum density that will be permitted on the site. As currently on the floor, it will be a maximum of 10 units per acre. I think we identified that the property was roughly 20 acres in size. So essentially, the difference between what's been requested by the applicant and what's on the floor now is cutting the density by 50%.
Just for clarity, they can still have the 5-story building. They can still have 190 parking spaces or whatever's listed. That is the motion on the floor, correct?
Technically.
Yes, technically. Okay. Now, whether or not you would need a 5-story building to get the number of units, you know, so, yeah.
But I think it's a valid point, so that it is understood that this could still look exactly the same, essentially, but will probably change in a form standpoint based off of the amount of
the
units.
Right.
Just to further that, half the density means half the number of people, half the number of units. So it is more of a compromise between what the developer wants and what the community wants.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I think be a question from Mr. Lawson, maybe it's just a comment. You know, I think if because of the challenged environment in the parcel itself and the cost that it would take to develop on that, a lower density may make a development impossible, just like single family development has not happened in the last 50 years, which is fine. That's we're not here to green light developments. We're here to rezone properties. I'll say that from my seat, there's going to likely be some questions from city council that are going to be in line with what we've heard from the community today. And they're going to look back at the MPC staff reports as well. But they're also going to be engaged in understanding what our housing inventory needs are as well, too. I think the compromising spirit is a good one or a fair one, though I would want to understand, because my prior question to Mr. Lawson was, did staff look at the appropriateness of any other density of housing? And his answer was no.
Correct.
And I would want to understand from MPC, whether we move forward today toward city council or not, between it getting from here to city council, what MPC staff's view is on a lower density there to have that expertise to be able to inform the discussion at city council. But again, you know, it could be a moot point for this petitioner because a lower density just may not be able to work with what they're trying to do.
And I'll add to that. I think your point raised is very valid because we essentially start to handcuff the site again because of the lack of density. Also, again, either lessens the amount of units, so and or it increases the amount that those units would then cost. So it kind of goes exactly against the idea of allowing for the multifamily in the first place. But I just wanted to add that thought.
I agree.
Mr. Coles?
Just one more thing. It is currently zoned RSF6, so they are asking for a variance. They are asking for a change from the current zoning. It is not our job to make a project profitable for a developer. I understand the needs of the city, but our job is to follow the guidelines and see what is appropriate for the area where the rezoning is being requested. It's currently RSF6. They could develop it right now as RSF6. They are asking for a variance to make the project work for their pockets, not for the neighborhood.
Well, Mr. Coles, I think as popular as that statement
Excuse
might
me,
be
hold
in
on,
this
hold
room.
Real quick. Ma'am, if you would, please, no. If we don't keep that stuff out, you're gonna be asked to leave. Thank you.
Again, as popular as that statement may be in the room, I think that our body is charged with doing this for every line item that comes up. And for the commission to paint this as something other than a landowner who's coming up for a zoning petition for one particular project where somebody might have, you know, some personal connection to the project, I think is a little unfair. And I think that we need to guard ourselves against that as a commission, because every agenda item that we're going to undertake is some property owner asking for some type of entitlement to be changed, a variance or an entitlement change to their property. And that's our entire job here. So I completely respect the position. I just want to make sure that we don't color our agenda items in that way, because that's our entire job at the commission.
I respect your position, but I will reiterate that we shouldn't just green light something to make it work for a developer.
I agree with that as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Coleman.
Yes. I want to support where the city manager come from, but also understand that, you know, you're saying that the property is zoned and can be developed. The reason it hasn't been developed is because it's not economically feasible under its current zoning. The reality is it's always about money. We can sit here and talk around this all we want to, but no one's doing anything in this world when it comes to moving out without it being about money. The homes that people are in now, it was about money putting them there. You know, so we need to start understanding that's a community good that we're talking. Everybody's impacted. Every one of us on this board lives somewhere. We're dealing with the same pressures around our neighborhoods that each and every person who comes in front of this board deals with. Some of it's good, some of it's bad. But to sit here and continue to hear that having things move forward is about money and greediness is not appropriate. It's not fair to the persons who come in front of us to have that be a part of it. So let's look at this from the standpoint of, is this the right density? We're not trying to make the density work for the developer. Is it the best thing for the community as a whole? If we lower it, it may sit there again. So we may be denying the development of the property again because economically the density doesn't work. We do have a duty for the growth of the city. We have to decide whether this property is the appropriate place for any of that growth to happen.
I think that was very well stated, Mr. Coleman. Ms. Bowles.
Yes, if I could just echo that, just so that everyone understands that, you know, a lot of the struggles, what you're saying, the struggles that we're having is that we're hearing that single family might not be economically feasible, but multifamily is not palatable. And so we're ending up in a situation where the land is not developable. And there has to be some situation, whether it's staff doing some research or whether it's the petitioner, that needs to come up with something that's a bit more palatable, or we just make a decision to move forward one way or the other.
Thank you. Anything further? So right now we have a motion on the floor that was made by Mr. Coles and seconded by Mr. Kegler, and that was essentially to reduce the density to a RMF 210. I must admit, I allowed for the motion to pass through, but I'm not exactly sure that was what we should have done. However, in this respect of the motion that is on the floor, we will allow for a vote on it, and then if it fails, then we will entertain another motion. If it passes, then it passes.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Exactly what is on the floor?
The motion on the floor was made by Mr. Coles and seconded by Mr. Kegler, and that is to change the zoning to a RMF 210 from the RSF 6. But, you know, I don't even think that's.
And the petitioner is asking for RMF 20.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. I want to clarify.
Okay, cool. If there's no further discussion on that motion, we'll entertain a vote. Ms. Bowles?
No.
Mr. Coleman?
No.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Irvin?
No.
Mr. Melder?
No.
Mr. Noah?
No.
Mr. Notrika?
No.
Mr. Kegler?
No.
And Mr. Wildwoody?
No.
I too vote no, so that motion fails, and we will entertain a new motion.
Motion to approve. Recommendation to rezone to RMF 20, RM 20.
This would be no, separate. It wouldn't be
that. It is separate. My motion is to
approve
petitioner's request.
Okay.
Make that clear.
Gotcha. Do we have a second?
Coleman second.
All right, so a motion is on the floor made by Mr. Irvin and seconded by Mr. Coleman to approve the petition as presented by the petitioner. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, hearing none. Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
No.
Mr. Irvin?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Mr. Noah?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Wildwoody?
Yes.
And I too vote yes. The motion is approved, and it is the project is approved as presented by the petitioner.
To be clear, Mr. Chairman, for the audience, this still has to go before City Council.
I would like to reiterate that note. This still does have to go before City Council. City Council will review that. That is also a public hearing. So if you have any concerns, there is an opportunity there as well.
Please contact your council members.
We'll move on to the next item on the agenda, and that is a rezoning map amendment of – one moment. I'll wait till the room clears. All right, thank you. So next item we'll move to the regular business, and that item is a rezoning map amendment at the address of 11903 Middle Ground Road. Okay. That petition number is 23-000305-ZA. Mr. Lotson.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The item on the regular agenda today, regular business, is a petition to rezone 11309 Middle Ground Road. The property is currently zoned BL, which is limited business, and the petitioner is proposing to rezone the property to the OIE zoning classification, which is office institutional expanded. As you probably recall, there are three office classifications within the zoning ordinance with a sort of a sliding scale of permitted uses.
Mr. Lotz, I'm going to jump in for a second.
Yes, sir.
I think you stated that it was 11309, or is it 309 or is it 903? I just want to make sure
it
we got it clear.
It is 11903. Okay, did I say that incorrect? Okay, thank my apologies.
No worries.
Petitioner is requesting the OIE zoning classification for this property. I'm going to zoom in just a little bit on this map. There are, because of the zoning that has taken place here recently, there's a property on either side of the subject property, which has been fairly recently rezoned, which is part of the discussion today. So the subject property is highlighted here in the hatched area. And as I mentioned, it's currently zoned limited business. This property was constructed in 1980 as a single family residence. In 2013, the property was rezoned from the single family zoning classification to an institutional classification, and a business operated in that location for some time. In 2019, it was changed to the current BL zoning classification. And as I mentioned, a business operated on the site. The property immediately north at the intersection of Dutchtown Road and Middle Ground Road was also recently rezoned to the neighborhood business zoning classification. That property is undergoing review by MPC and City of Savannah to potentially become a convenience store gas station under the BN zoning, which it has. The property immediately south is a former contractor's office, and it is now operating as an animal hospital. Point being that most of the properties that front onto Middle Ground Road that were former residences are converting all along Middle Ground Road. We see this pattern. It's quite common because of the widening that's taking place there, the amount of traffic that is on that road now. For those of you who remember what it looked like before it was widened, it was a much more sort of rural road with houses that abutted Middle Ground Road, but there's been substantial development and redevelopment mostly in that corridor. There are some significant institutional uses as well. So it is going away from being residential fronting onto Middle Ground Road. This is the current zoning map that shows the properties as I mentioned. So in the immediate vicinity, you have a congregate care facility on the north side of Dutchtown Road, some retail, various different offices as well. And behind the subject property is a church. This is an aerial map that shows that property. One of the things we discussed in the pre-meeting was the existing sort of wooded buffer behind the building here that separates it from the church property. This entire corner from a zoning standpoint is already commercial, but the petitioner's proposed use, which is a pest control business, is not permitted within the current BL limited business zoning classification. In review of the zoning criteria, staff did find that the proposed zoning is consistent with the majority of the criteria, that the uses permitted within the district are similar to uses within adjacent that are allowed on adjacent properties, that the current zoning classification is somewhat limiting from the standpoint of permitted uses, and that the OIE is both compatible and consistent with the neighboring property immediately to the south, as well as the commercial property immediately to the north, and as well across Middle Ground Road. There is a consistent pattern of non-residential zoning. Based on those findings, we're recommending approval of the request to rezone the property from BL to the OIE zoning classification.
Thank you, Mr. Liza. Any questions for staff? Okay, hearing none, we will entertain the petitioner if the petitioner is here. Are you your petitioner? Okay. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Gregory Polster, and I'm the current owner of the property. Chairman, members of the commission, thank you for having me. I don't have anything further to add at this time. Thank you for your consideration and any of your questions.
We appreciate it. Any questions for the petitioner? Okay. Thank you, sir. I don't believe we have anybody representing other members of the public. So if that is indeed the case, there is nothing to rebut. So we'll entertain a motion.
Calls motion to approve staff's recommendation.
We have a second.
Cole, second.
Okay, motion on the floor made by Mr. Coles and seconded by Ms. Bowles to approve staff's recommendation. Any discussion on that motion? Okay, hearing none, we'll entertain a vote. Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Mr. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Irvin?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Mr. Noah?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Kegler?
Yes.
Mr. Wildwoody?
Yes.
I too vote yes. Motion carries and the project is approved. Thank you, sir. We'll move on to the next item on the agenda. That is presentations. There are none listed, and we'll move into other business. There is a proposed amendments to the 2023 MPC meeting calendar. Mr. Lotson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I mentioned in the pre-meeting, this is what we consider a somewhat minor change, but we are proposing to revise the adopted calendar of meetings for 2023. We discovered that there was an issue with our existing cutoff dates. Our cutoff dates are those dates by which someone has to file an application with the city in order to be placed on an agenda for the corresponding meeting. We realized that there was not enough time between the cutoff date and the meeting date in order for staff to make the necessary public notices and get those out. So what we're proposing is to move back the cutoff dates approximately 1 week in all the months that you see in the green area. We are not proposing to change any meeting dates. So all the meeting dates that were adopted at the beginning of the year will remain the same. Cutoff dates will move back 1 week, giving staff the opportunity to make the timely public notices for zoning petitions and other items that come before this body.
Okay. Any questions for staff or comments?
I have one question.
Mr. Coleman.
I just wanted to ask, how did this change affect this first meeting on March 21st for the persons who were already in the pipeline?
We got the notification that some items were submitted on the cutoff date. Those applicants were notified that they would not be on the corresponding meeting that had been published and that their meeting would have to be
their hearing would have to be moved by one meeting. So that's why we wanted to have this on the agenda as soon as possible to correct that issue.
Mr. Noah.
I'll make a motion.
Oh, there's no.
Do we need to accept the proposed changes?
Yes. The board did adopt this calendar at the beginning.
Yeah, that's right. So I guess technically it probably would be easier to just vote it. Yeah. Let's do that.
Noah makes motion to adopt the proposed revisions to the 2023 MPC meeting calendar.
Cole, second.
And we'll do a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Now, the only thing on the other business I just want to throw out there, everybody should be in receipt of notification about three House bills that should be of concern that could directly impact the way this body operates and other bodies. Please review that information. The positions of our organization has been stated in the documents that you have received. And if you would like to chime in at all, please contact staff and we'll move it through the appropriate channels if action has not already been taken on these items. Beyond that, there is no need for executive session today, and we will entertain a motion to adjourn.
I have one comment. Just for the record, we did not adopt minutes from the last meeting. I believe they were not ready or they were not presented, but that they would be ready next month for us to adopt or to approve. Sorry.
Noted.
Cole's motion to adjourn.
All right. Thank you. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.